Bamshee, good to see you, buddy. I haven't seen you since Costa Rica. We
Me
got to
too.
connect. Phone call, man. I know I owe you a text. Let's get in a call sometime soon.
Sure.
Good evening, gentlemen. Maybe good morning, depending where you are in the world. Today's topic of conversation is managing stress and optimizing daily energy. I thought that seemed like a useful topic. Anyone else looking for some strategies to manage stress? Anyone looking for some strategies to optimize daily energy? Normally, those two things are synonymous. And so today we'll go through a little bit of the introduction to stress and ultimately understanding a little bit about what it is and how it interferes and affects our daily energy status. Before we do that, Andrew, Stevie, Dan, I see you on there as well. Anything you guys want to share as far as client wins or challenges this week? Andrew?
I see quite a few guys on actually right now. I see Brian, I see Antonio, Richard, Greg, and I said it, I think it was on Tuesday. Antonio's just been doing a great job with adhering to everything. Photos are looking great. Brian as well, he actually came down with COVID and didn't miss a step, so where somebody would normally take a step back, he kept making more progress. So that was cool.
Corruption.
And Richard is Richard, you know? So good to see you,
Richard
bud.
is stud. Richard's a machine. Dan, any of you guys here? Any of you guys who aren't here that you want to celebrate this week?
None of my guys are here as yet, but yeah, there's quite a few people doing really well at the main moment. JP's doing really well, Chad Hagen, Alex Bueno, kind of Justin Rowe, all of those guys. Only been with me a month, month and a half, but all kicking ass and kind of achieving exactly what they set out to do at the start. So yeah, things are good in camp down at the moment.
Yeah, so for any of the attendees who aren't familiar with Coach Dan, he's usually not on these calls because he's from the UK and he's probably usually sleeping right now. He's currently in the same house as me, as is Mattia. So we have the crew on here tonight, and we're actually about to have a team dinner with everyone who's in Toronto. So Dan is an incredible coach, been with us not too long now, 6 months, but I've known of him and known him for quite a while, and he's truly exceptional. And some of you guys will get to know him in Spain if you're able to make it there with us, because well, he will definitely be there. Stevie, anything for you?
Forgive my hair. I just finished at the gym. You know what? Like, there's a couple guys on here, Bamshi, Jimmy, and they'll be examples of this. But like, I'm in a good place. A lot of my clients, I'm blessed to have a lot of great people. And beyond that, it's just what I'm noticing is a lot of people all around are just taking advantage of, video feedback, which I've always thought is obviously a very, very powerful lever in us getting results, because it gives us an opportunity to, get really intentional with what we do here, which is, exercise. So it's really cool because this thing I've been exploring with a lot of people is categorizing movement, right? Between things like a skill, like putting in that category, and Jimmy would be, he'd be privy to this, like saying this is something we want to enhance and focus on skill development, and then we'd look at other categories and say this is something we're going to look at driving output with, and then just really, really nailing that down in the program so that people can understand what their intention is. Because when it comes down to something like a lunge, it's, you're probably gonna, I would wager that you're probably gonna always gonna feel that in your lungs before you get any kind of crazy taxation in your quads compared to something like a hack squat, right? So whereas Jimmy, actually his example before, he would talk to me about that when he actually started getting more intentional with his movements in like things like an actual lunge, he started enjoying it, started liking the leg day. He was like, yeah, this is actually kind of fun now because I get to explore ranges and I have a purpose in going in there, rather than the purpose being handing your soul to the pavement. So it's good stuff.
And that's such an interesting topic you bring up. And not that it's the conversation for tonight, but the idea of load placement, like where the load is placed relative to your body, plays a pretty significant role in how you fatigue. So some people put a bar on their back, some people put dumbbells in their hands, some people put a dumbbell in one hand, and that can really play into what I call fatigue patterns. So if I put a bar on my back, it's very likely that bar is going to compress me, right? If I put a dumbbell in one hand, it's going to lean me. So you got to really think of like, how is this affecting my ability to stabilize and transfer force through my foot in reference to a lunge? So I want you guys to one of the things that maybe is the greatest opportunity that exists for all of you and me sometimes still is to just become so present in your body that you're able to feel all those things. Like if I tell you to do a lunge, let's say you're lunging with your right foot and you put the weight in your right hand, how does that feel different than the weight in your left hand? And to most people, they're like, oh, it's insignificant. But the reality is it's really significant. You're just not noticing it enough yet. And so if you start to notice how it shifts your weight distribution, how it shifts your how you have to contract your body, and obviously as the weight goes heavier, the more it affects you. I just encourage you to get that level of aware in your body. And what you'll notice is when you do that, one, you can't do anything fast. It's almost impossible to be mindless. You have to be mindful. And you'll start to pay attention to things like, how is my foot striking the floor? What part of my muscles are contracting? Like, if I'm doing a lunge, it's like, oh, it's for my leg. Was it for the inside of your leg or the outside of your leg? Is it for your glute or for your quad? And the answer is most people go, well, it's for all of them. Well, yeah, but in what proportion? Like, could you do a lunge that works more glute and less quad? And could you do a lunge that works more inside of your thigh versus outside of your thigh? And the answer is yes. And you don't know the how unless you pay attention, unless one of us is standing there like yelling at you or correcting you in real time. So one of the greatest opportunities that just people just miss in exercising, which is why we have a job. And we're so for those of you that don't know, Gavin and I just and Dan just finished our first weekend of what we're calling what is our certification, which we're calling a precision execution coach. And so this is the first line in a series of our certification, moving people in the direction of the classification that we're calling a certified muscle expert. So by the time someone's done all of our levels, they'll be able to classify themselves as a certified muscle expert. And the goal here is like, well, how do we get people to connect with their body and feel what they're actually doing the work with? And so you guys, well, it's my leg. Well, no, it's not your leg. It's a lot more than your leg. It's very nuanced. You don't have to know names, but you should be able to feel a lot. And so while I said that isn't the topic of conversation today, ultimately the goal is, how do I get the greatest amount of effectiveness and efficiency out of everything in my life? Sound accurate? Like, I want to be more effective at this. I hate wasting my time. Anyone else dislike wasting their time? Yeah, I hate it, man. Like, if I can be 10x more effective, sign me up. Right. And I'll tell you with a high degree of certainty, all the guys who came to Costa Rica, I know Vamshi will be like, yep. It's probably an overstatement, Vamshi, but how much more effective have you been, if at all, since you learned to train with us in Costa Rica? I'd love to hear a little feedback. And I'm not looking for a plug. I just want some feedback.
A lot. I think that's what I've been telling to Coach Steve, that I'm being more mindful now. Everything that I do, I'm being more mindful, like everything. So it's seamless. Like I look less tired, I get more work done.
Beautiful, man. Love it. And again, there's a lot of other people there, like Zach. I see you getting in the car, man. Good to see you again. I know you're driving, so I won't ask
You
you to
too.
talk unless you. How are you, man?
Good, not driving yet. I have definitely been more effective since Costa Rica, much more mindful about what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and paying closer attention to the movements. And I think I've been asking more questions about, why am I doing this? Trying to
Beautiful.
figure out the purpose of the movement.
Yeah. And so the opportunity you have in front of you, Zach, as well as asking questions, is to start just like not even having, you don't even have to understand why. You just have to start to understand what. Like, what is actually happening, right? Before you understand why, you'll have to understand what. And you'd be like, oh, when I do it this way, my glute contracts more. When I do it that way, my quad contracts more. When I do it this way, it's my lateral. Or like, just start paying such acute attention that you can start just directing it like a conductor of a symphony. And if you guys can get that, your own ability to get results will the trajectory will increase because now you, as like the conductor of a symphony, you can direct tension where you want it to go. Here's the prerequisite. Most people are so mindless when they're in the gym that they don't actually have the ability to do it. And so there's a chicken or the egg here, right? Do you become more mindful before you go to the gym, or do you become more mindful because you go to the gym? in my belief, at least for most people, it can obviously go both ways, but my belief is that exercise is the path to mindfulness for us men, because there's not typically other ways in our life where we have to become super present, super mindful, unless obviously you're practicing meditator or doing some type of breath work practice. Any questions before I move on to talking about energy management and stress optimization? All right, so I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time on this because this could be a long-winded conversation, but I'd like to get you guys as quick as I can to some really useful action items. The first thing you got to understand is, and I was talking about this to, I think, Gavin today, most people spend 16 hours of their day awake, give or take, sometimes 17, sometimes 18, whatever. Give or take, you're awake 16 hours a day. Most people have their foot on the gas pedal, so to speak, on the accelerator from the time they get up to the time they go to bed, right? And we're trying to get as much in as we can. So we think of that in terms of what's happening at the level of our brain, what's happening at the level of our nervous system, and what's happening at the level of our muscular system. What do you think is the overall level of arousal at the level of the brain, the nervous system, the muscular system? It's probably pretty high, right? Your body's probably redlining or close to it a lot of the day for most people. And so when you get to the end of the day and you're like, okay, body, I've been asking you to redline from the time we started till right about now. Now please go to sleep. What do you think your body is very likely to say? Well, I'm tired. I'm going to close my eyes. But guess what? And I may fall asleep really quickly, but guess what's going to happen shortly thereafter for most people? Their sleep is going to be poor. Their heart rate is going to, still going to be racing when they're sleeping. Their brain's going to be racing. They're going to wake up in the middle of the night with an elevated body temperature because they never took the time to train the skill of turning the nervous system, brain, and muscular system down. So the second I sit down, every time I eat, I'm intentional of dialing back the nervous system, putting away the phone. Developing the skill of dialing back the nervous system. We're all walking around on super high alert, super rigid, super tight, super fast, breathing really heavy, breathing really fast, really shallow. And we have to punctuate our day with relaxation, with what we call parasympathetic interventions. For those of you who don't understand nerd speak, for the nervous system, you have sympathetic, think S, stress. You have parasympathetic, think rest and digest. And so, if we're always in this high state of sympathetic arousal because we're stressed, because we're underslept, because we're taking too many stimulants, even training is very sympathetic in nature, we're always going to live in that state. Guess what that's associated with? Elevated cortisol. Elevated cortisol is not good or bad, it's just a hormone that drives increased energy output. So your body goes, hey, I need to mobilize more energy because this guy's asking me to do more work. So the body mobilizes both fat and carbohydrates and amino acids. And that sounds like a good thing. That means, oh, I'm going to burn fat. Well, maybe until your body becomes resistant to these nutrients. So people who are typically diabetic or pre-diabetic, it's due to this chronic exposure to cortisol and these hormones ultimately that are what we call catabolic hormones. The sympathetic stress system is driving catabolism, it's driving breakdown. That may be good for some people sometimes, but it's not good all the time. We want to try to integrate a balance between these two systems so the body is only using the energy it needs when it needs it. Because if you're burning, if think of redlining your car all day. You leave your car in first gear and you just keep redlining it all day, or even if you're in fifth gear and redlining it. Eventually, the car is going to go, sorry, dude, we got nothing left. There's no more gas in the tank when you need it. How many of you guys have been to the gym in the last month and didn't feel like being there and didn't have that extra oomph that you needed or wanted? Right. So it tells us that you're probably someone who's, I see you, Marnie. I see, I don't know. Yeah. So, guys, always make sure you have your name on this thing. Some guys come on, like we got BC here. Ideally, have your name. So you're getting to the gym and your body's been on this high alert all day, and you get there and you're like, dude, I'm done. I got nothing left. It's happened to me before. If I train at 3 o'clock, 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I take coffee first thing in the morning, I'm done at 3 o'clock. I'm like, I don't even want to go. So if I prolong my coffee intake till 12, man, I'm energized as heck when I go to the gym at 3 because my body hasn't been burning on high alert all day, right? So learning to manage energy is important. So training yourself to come back out of the sympathetic stressed state and stimulating the parasympathetic rest and digest state at punctuated points throughout the day. Every time you sit down, one breath. Every time you eat, five breaths. And the key with the breaths is try to make it a 1-to-2 ratio, meaning 1 second in, 2 seconds out, or 4 seconds in, 8 seconds out, approximately a 1-to-2 ratio. So if I'm breathing in for three, it's out for six or longer. And that ratio tends to be more stimulating to the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, if you guys want the ideal breath cadence, quote unquote, ideal breath cadence for most people, to access what science calls resonant breathing, where your brain and your heart actually become synchronized, we want to breathe in for four, slight pause, out for six, slight pause. My suggestion is that every single human does this for 5 minutes a day. Look up if you're committed to this, there's an app or a business called HeartMath. Look up the HeartMath Institute. And all of their research is around this concept of resonant breathing. They have an app, and it's literally just a ball that you follow on the screen that goes up for 4 seconds, down for 6 seconds, up for 4 seconds, down for 6 seconds. It's annoyingly boring, but incredibly effective. So when it comes to stress management, gentlemen, what am I saying is your single biggest lever to improve your energy? There's one kind of theme that I'm throwing at you here. What's the intervention? Breathing. Breathing is by far your single biggest intervention to manage stress and improve what we call heart rate variability. Many of you may not know what heart rate variability is, but in the simplest terms, it's a measure, it's a proxy of your body's resiliency to stress. Someone who has low heart rate variability tends to have low ability to adapt and low resilience to stress. People who have a high heart rate variability have a faster ability to adapt and have high resiliency to stress. This gentleman is 100% trainable. You can train to be more resilient and more adaptive to stress. And it's a skill. And there's a small number of things that you should be doing every day if you want to create an intervention or want to create a shift in your resilience to stress, your HRV. You want to hear some of those? Okay. Breath work, we talked about that one. That's a great one. The more you do it, the better you get. It's a skill. I have the ability, and I'm not bragging about this, but I have the ability to turn myself from pretty stressed into relatively zen in one breath because it's a skill. Same in the other direction. I can also go up and become very much, and call it assertive, aggressive, or aroused in one breath, right? Think of it in terms of like when I'm getting in the gym. If I get one like really stimulating breath, my heart rate should shoot up. And most people can't do that. Practice it. It's a skill. And if you really want to go, it's helpful. It's helpful before that set. Your blood pressure will shoot up, your heart rate will shoot up, and you're like, all right, I'm ready to go, man. My body's mobilizing energy, it's mobilizing blood to where it needs to go. On the other side of that is we want to be able to play it. Think of it like a game. Because once you get it, just like riding a bicycle, you can never unget it. Think of it like a game. As soon as I lay in bed, I may or may not have a superpower for falling asleep. Why do I do it? Because as soon as I get in bed, I do one breath and I feel my whole body go and I melt into the bed. It's a skill. We walk around all day like this on high alert. I go, And as soon as I feel my body release, my muscular system release, my nervous system release, my breathing slows, my body goes done out. Like it's a skill that can be practiced and honed. Does anyone have any questions so far?
Ben, I have like somewhat of a question.
Sweet
So
bro.
the past couple of nights I've been getting very hard to sleep and that stuff, and everything's black and everything. And for some reasons it's like, okay, if I can't do nothing, I'll be productive. Do some little things of learning or programming and that stuff. And then like 10 and 15 minutes later, I feel drowsy. I don't know why.
Yeah, dude, I would just train yourself to grab a book or turn on like a meditation on your phone. Man, I get it. I understand the temptation to be productive, but the worst thing, remember that everything in life is a skill. The worst skill that you can acquire is productivity at 3 o'clock in the morning. Because what'll happen is the more you do it, you'll get better at it. And you'll be like, oh, I'm really awake at 3 in the morning, and I might as well just always stay up at 3 in the morning. And the number one thing correlated with one of the number of things correlated with cancer is the absence of melatonin. As soon as you get up and look at a computer, your melatonin's tanking. So I don't know if I've talked about this. Hold on, let me say this to everyone just so I can give context to what I just said. Melatonin is a natural is a hormone that occurs in the body that is inversely proportional to cortisol. So as cortisol, we start the day, cortisol goes up. Toward the end of the day, cortisol is supposed to come down. As cortisol comes down, melatonin comes up. They're inversely proportional. That our melatonin suppression, my melatonin production is almost completely suppressed from really small amounts of light. So if you put your phone on, the computer on before bed, dude, you're just creating the absence of melatonin. And melatonin, as I said, is the number one internal antioxidant for against cortisol, or excuse me, against cancer. There's a study done, you guys can look this up. Blind people have a lower incidence of most types of cancer because of elevated melatonin levels. So it's worth looking at to like, hey man, like get neurotic about light. You know, I started wearing goggles recently because I was like, if I have any light in my room, I'm putting something over my face.
Well, why did my brain just like get sleepier after just like 15 minutes of doing something on the computer then?
Because of something called adenosine. So it's called sleep pressure. So when So you woke up because of adrenaline and you stayed and you went to bed because of adenosine. I know this sounds like the same thing. Adrenaline tends to wake people up because of temperature. Sometimes adrenaline can wake people up because of blood glucose. So adrenaline is like that awake alert hormone. And that can sometimes wake people up because their blood glucose drops or because their body temperature rises. Sometimes it's the same. So that's most likely why people wake up in the middle of the night, dysregulated cortisol rhythms, which spikes adrenaline. But as soon, but because you're actually tired, your body will put you to sleep pretty quickly. Adenosine is a this pressure that builds throughout the day to sleep. So like if you ever feel like drowsy at night, that's adenosine, which is an accumulation. It's a byproduct of ATP production throughout the day. As you produce more energy throughout the day, this adenosine accumulates in your brain and creates sleep pressure. That's why you'd fall asleep pretty quickly. As soon as you do something active, your eyes will start to produce energy, your body will produce energy, you'll be tired.
I'll try to do something like read. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Read or dude, or just put on a yoga nidra. So, Sarah, could you throw a yoga nidra from YouTube into the chat box? There's a few of them. Just look up a yoga nidra. There's one specific one that I like, but I forget which one it is. So someone asked, if you take melatonin before bed, is it good or bad thing? Does it affect my testosterone in any manner? If anything, melatonin would affect your testosterone positively, I think. I don't know if there's data on that, but I would think it'd be positive. Here's the thing with melatonin. I'm not sure. There's controversial research on melatonin. Some people will say you'll suppress your own natural production. Some people say it doesn't. So the research goes in both ways. I know that Gav uses it a lot when he travels. So when he's coming over here to North America, which he does often, he'll take melatonin to reset his circadian rhythms. To me, that makes a lot of sense. If I'm going across time zones and my body's kind of out of whack, melatonin is a very good way to reset your circadian rhythms. But I wouldn't take it in an ongoing way. Like if you're having a hard time falling asleep, it's a good thing for falling asleep, not a good thing for staying asleep. Staying asleep is more usually related to adrenaline and blood sugar, I think. If you want to stay asleep, my favorite supplements, well, I've got a few actually, but ketone esters by Ketone Aid, KE4. Sarah, I don't know if you want to drop that in the chat as well. KE4 by Ketone Aid. Couple other things have been working really well for me for sleep as well lately, if you guys want to talk about that. Does anyone else have questions about stress management? I'm going to give you one little hack. If you're ever anxious and overwhelmed and stressed, one thing that's going to help you calm down You guys may have heard this before. It's called the physiological sigh. You take two inhales followed by an exhale. So it sounds like this. So inhale all the way, a little bit more, and then finish out. So on that, between the inhales, we don't exhale. Just inhale, inhale more, out. And that tends to increase the body's parasympathetic tone, so that this parasympathetic inputs.
I do have a question about what you're talking about. Yep. So one of my goals this year is to get better at breathing. And so I've been working on that with Chris and watching some of the videos that you've done with some guy with a cool hat from Costa Rica, actually.
Yeah.
But in doing so, I have found that I hold my breath throughout the day. And I don't know, are there any strategies or like why people do that? But when I'm focused on it, I remember to breathe well. But then when I'm kind of working or doing things, I'm finding myself consistently holding my breath, which I think is only causing more stress.
That's interesting. So how, like, do you notice like how long? Is it just like, is it just slight?
No, it's pretty long. And I noticed my son does it too.
So
I don't know if that's like an anxious thing.
So the first thing that comes to mind, Zach, is it's actually a good thing, but that could be wrong because I don't know your circumstance. So one of the if you talk to the top breath scientist in the world who's been on my podcast, his name is Dr. Peter Litchfield. He tells you that he'll tell you the single most important thing for people to do is breathe less. He said, we overbreathe. That's the biggest problem that's driving disease in our world is people just overbreathe. And so he wouldn't tell you to stop breathing, hold your breath, but he would tell you to breathe low and slow, very slight breathing. His suggestion is try to breathe 3 times a minute. And so you may just be doing that intuitively. Maybe that's a way, like, do you feel it makes you anxious or do you feel like that's just helping you concentrate?
It makes my heart rate go up. I definitely notice that. I think I do it when I'm engaged and like stressed.
Interesting. Super.
So I don't know.
Then it's not a good thing, I would say.
Yeah.
So you're finding that since you've been doing breath work, you're holding your breath more. Is that, am I hearing you correctly?
Well, I notice it now. Before I never noticed it because I think I was just always in this anxious state. So I don't know. I just didn't know if there's any strategies for like how you can do something to train yourself to not do that when you're not consciously focused on it.
Yeah. So the first thing I would tell you, well, you're noticing. So I wouldn't worry about when you don't notice it, but as soon as you notice it, the key is to as calmly as you can return to breathing. So the key then is like, can I continue to breathe as lightly as possible? Which means if I had to breathe in such a way that I didn't disrupt my nose hairs, that's the level of breath I want you to resume with. So instead of like trying to take a big breath in or a big breath out, you know, everyone tells you when you're stressed, you got to breathe. No, you don't. You have to breathe as little as possible. And so really small sip of air in, slightly extended sip breath air out. So maybe it's like a 1 or 2 second sip of air in, followed by a 3 to 4 second breath out.
Okay.
Like that would be my strategy. And okay. In that moment, use that as a trigger for you to not only breathe slowly, but also to release tension anywhere you're feeling it in your body, anywhere you're holding your body. Is it your face? Is it your neck? Is it your shoulders? Is it your abdomen? And just let it go, man. Like you're floating down a river. Like, I'm gonna let it all go. It'll be easy.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say just use it as a trigger. I think it's a good thing because it's making you mindful.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
My pleasure. Any other questions? All right. So when we talk about energy management, this is a beautiful segue. Why is breathing related to energy? Well, first, oxygen is the driving force behind ATP production. So if at any time we are not getting oxygen into our cells, that becomes a problem. Those cells become what's called glycolytic, which is not bad. It just shifts them away from burning fat for fuel and shifts them more in the direction of using carbohydrate for fuel. Now, people, if you've ever had a hard time in your life losing body fat, oftentimes it can be to your body tending to be more glycolytic. There's a lot of reasons why this can happen. But for many people, breathing is a big one. If we just constantly overbreathe, our CO2 concentrations and oxygen concentrations become dysregulated in our blood, and the body tends to be less tolerant. Now, this is a confusing thing, but it becomes less tolerant to carbon dioxide. You actually want your body to be more tolerant to the accumulation of carbon dioxide. So, Zach, this is kind of relevant to you too. So as you're standing there holding your breath, your body just naturally, because of being alive, is producing CO2, right? So as your body produces ATP, which is the primary singular source of energy for every living thing in the universe, ATP is this primary energy instrument, this energy molecule. And the byproduct of producing it is carbon dioxide and water. So carbon dioxide gets excreted, it goes into the bloodstream and then starts to eventually make its way into the lungs so it can be expelled. But if you're holding your breath, then the numbers start to rise. The CO2 in the blood starts to go up. What happens when the CO2 in the blood starts to go up? Your body goes, well, I need to breathe, I need to get it out. So if you have a higher tolerance to carbon dioxide, meaning you can accumulate more, that's actually a good thing. Because you'll breathe less, your heart rate will stay lower, and your perceived effort will be less. I'm going to say that again. Higher CO2 tolerance is better. We want the ability to train us to be to be tolerant to CO2. The lower tolerance to CO2, I'm going to give you an example. Anyone ever walk up a flight of stairs and feel tired, like out of breath? That's an indication of a very low CO2 tolerance. As soon as you start to accumulate ever any CO2, your body goes, I got to breathe more. That's a very low CO2 tolerance. These are people who they walk up the stairs and that feels like it's hard. That feels like exertion. How many of you guys want to be 80 years old and have a hard time walking up the stairs? Not me. So, or 100 years old and have a hard time walking up the stairs? Not me. So, training the CO2 tolerance is an imperative. And we can do that in a number of different ways, breath work being one, aerobic fitness being another. And we could just train it through some simple breath holds. So practicing the ability to accumulate CO2 actually has great benefit as well. Another little interesting side note, if any of your wives ever said, hey, you need to eat a more alkaline diet because someone on the internet told them they need a more alkaline diet, you could tell them that's complete horseshit. There's no such thing as foods that make you alkaline. There is such thing as breathing that makes you more alkaline. Breathing is the single only thing that will ever change the pH in your body. However slight, it's the only thing that can change your pH. CO2 and oxygen are the only things that will change the partial pressure of hydrogen in your blood. Accumulating more CO2 will make you more acidic. Accumulating more oxygen will make you more alkaline, neither of which is good. So if you ever hear the alkaline diet being pitched, it's horseshit. There's value in eating alkaline foods, but that doesn't mean it makes you more alkaline. What's 2 hours from you, Stevie?
Sorry, Gab mentioned a course in Halifax. I was just playing to.
Oh, sorry. And does that seem at all helpful, gentlemen? Does that seem like interesting, like CO2, understanding your CO2? So here's what I want you guys to do. Here's an action item for you. The next time you walk up a flight of stairs, I want you to hold your breath. It could be 10 stairs, 20 stairs, whatever. I just want you to hold your breath. And here's the thing. When you're done with those stairs, I want you to stay as calm as you can. Don't quickly breathe. Breathe as slowly, resume breathing as slowly as you can. And every time you walk upstairs, I encourage you to practice this. Can I walk up with the same amount of vigor that I normally do and try to hold my breath? Now, if you're someone who has really bad cardiovascular fitness, this may be an interesting, just don't do it near water. I don't want you guys passing out and falling down the stairs. So only do it going up the stairs, not down. And if it feels like you need to breathe, breathe, but breathe slowly. So no aggressive breath holds. We don't want to train aggressive breath holds, just a little bit of breath control. And so the reason we would do it going up the stairs is because we actually want that little bit of exertion. And we're training ourselves to be calm under stress. Walking upstairs, however minimal, is indeed stressful at a physiological level because we're increasing energy production. So if someone's yelling at me because I'm I don't know, getting cut off in a car, or I'm in trouble, or I'm in a stressful situation, it's the exact same physiological response as if I'm walking up a flight of stairs. As far as the body goes, the body releases cortisol, increases energy production, and ultimately increases cortisol. So cortisol, energy production, and increases CO2 production. Make sense? So we're going to train our ability to become more resilient to stressful situations. So stress just creates a physiological response of increased energy production, increased cortisol, increased CO2. Yeah. And so no matter what the stress is, that's our response. We're going to learn to control ourselves in those situations. Next time you guys go in the gym, before you start your workout, jump on the bike, 3 to 5 minutes, start pedaling, start introducing really, really light breath holds. Maybe hold for 10 seconds. And then the key is, once you're done, you don't breathe fast. You breathe slow. With me? This is going to, over time, if you do this consistently for 30 days, consistently change your resilience to stress. Not just stress in the gym. It's going to make your life less stressful. Guaranteed. It'll change your perception to stress. It won't feel stressful anymore to go through these potentially stressful situations. Who has questions? Lewis, fill me in, man. What's going on with you? I haven't seen you out here in a little bit. How's your life? What's going on with you? You're muted.
I'm good.
Good, man. Tell me what's new.
Well, you know, you're talking about sleep and stuff like that. Since I don't sleep very well, I get up about 1 o'clock in the morning and I do my workout first thing in the morning, because I find out that in the afternoon, sometimes I'm just too tired.
Yeah. Well, if you're not sleeping well, that's common.
Yeah. I've been having this issue for many, many, many years.
Is that job related?
No, because I've had different jobs in the last 35 years, and it's been going on for over 35 years. I've tried all kinds of supplements, all kinds of stuff. I do not meditate, and that's what Greg's trying to get me to meditate and breathe.
Where do you live, Lewis?
California.
What part?
San Mateo. You know San Mateo? That's San Mateo Airport.
I'm just trying to think if there's any. So, man, you're in California. It's the meditation and breathwork capital of the world. There's got to be someone there you can be like, hey, I want to learn. So the thing about breathwork, Lewis, is like, just like riding a bicycle, once you get it, you get it, and it will forever be a tool that you can utilize when you need it. And I'll tell you, man, as far as like leverage at your age, like, you want to become masterful at managing stress, man. Like, if you want to put an extra quality 10 years on your life, managing your stress through breath, through just learning to be more present, mindful, and zen is going to change your life, man. Like, I would, especially sleep. Your two biggest levers in life are stress and sleep, right?
Right.
Maybe gut health. I would say I would move heaven and earth to, like, one, improve your aerobic fitness. If you're not doing already, like, cardio, ramp it up. You know, obviously Greg knows that Greg's a master. Right. But man, we got to fix that sleep, brother. That's not an awesome thing.
Yeah, and talking about walking upstairs, I do get out of breath when I walk upstairs. Well, and I noticed lately in my workouts that I've been kind of huffing and puffing after my sets.
Yeah. Man, I can't imagine sleeping. What time do you get to bed? I'm guessing
I go to bed around 7:30, but I wake up about 2 to 3 hours later. Then I go back to sleep and I wake up again. So it's like on and off. So about 4 years, I decided, you know what, if I'm going to be up all night, I might as well just work out.
How's your sleep environment? Have you, you know, blacked out the curtains, unplugged all the electronics, made it cold? Have you gone through all those typical?
No, I don't have blackouts. It's dark in my room, but you know, my clock is lit.
Man, would you be willing to make those changes?
I guess I could try it, you know.
It's not a try, man. It's like, just get it out. The way I would think of it, man, like, I'm a pretty extreme personality, but like, if there's something in it that could affect me negatively, it's out. like it's out. I'm like, no, man, I value my sleep too much. 'Cause I mean, if you're gonna extend your life, you gotta sleep. It's just a non-negotiable.
Right.
Yeah, it's like would you go weeks without eating or like years without eating? Like, no, because that feels like dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I man, I would move heaven and earth to fix that sleep. And listen, man, we can support you. We've got some great sleep insights, some great sleep experts in our ecosystem. We can support you, but you got to be willing to do all the stuff. And I
Right.
understand, you know, like financially, sometimes it's an investment to buy like a thing that cools your mattress and the blackout curtains and literally take all electronics out of your room, all of it. No, I don't care if it's a clock, a lamp, all of it. Take it out, put it somewhere else. Nothing in that bedroom except for sleep and sex. That's it.
So you're saying that the device of the electricity of the device, like the EMTs or some, is causing it?
It, I don't know, man. I would say like if it's if there's a 1% chance that it could negatively impact my sleep by 1%, it's out.
So if you take all electrical devices out, what do you use for waking up?
Well, if you put your alarm in the hallway, would you hear it?
Yeah, the whole house would.
Wow, everyone's gonna wake up. Well, I don't know, man. I would do the best you can to find a solution. I mean, if you so you can definitely find good old like old school clocks, which is like set up for 6 a.m. It's one of those old analog clocks. So you can find something that doesn't have a light. Like if it's just a clock to wake you up, then I'm sure you can deal with
Well,
that.
yeah, I can turn this one all the way down to dim. You won't even see a light.
Right.
And I've also tried that KE4. I did it for quite a few months, and it didn't seem to leak. Because I fall asleep right away. I don't have a problem. Within 5 minutes, I hit the bed. I'm out. You know, it's just staying asleep is the hard part.
Yep. So have you, are you wearing an Oura ring?
No.
Or so man, there's a bunch of stuff we could do, right? Oura ring, we could look and see what's happening. We could look at continuous glucose monitor. Do you tend to be your glucose? I think Greg said your glucose is really good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so stress probably at this point, Lewis, if it's been 35 years, it's just your circadian rhythm. So we have to reset your circadian rhythm, which means like unfortunately, it'll probably take 4 to 5 days. But my suggestion is on those days when you got to wake up, you just stay in bed, man. You stay in bed, it's dark, it's shitty, but you got to lay there and just breathe. Maybe you put on a meditation. You train yourself to stay in bed. I did this recently with one of my clients. He used to get up at 4, now he gets up at 5:30. So we added 90 minutes of quality sleep to his routine every day. And like his life has changed. He's put on so much more muscle. His body composition, he's like shredded right now. We're trying to increase his calories because like we're not trying to get him lean. He's probably 8% body fat. Body's changed like this because we got an extra 90 minutes of sleep every day. There's stuff we can do, buddy. Don't ever feel like, and guys, this goes for all of you. Don't ever feel like your challenges are unique. Your challenges are not unique. Your challenges are common. We all go through the same shit. Your gifts are unique. Your challenges are common. So always remember, like someone else here is going through this. I'm going to share this because like there's a way to fix this. And
Okay.
even if it's like over the next couple of weeks or months, dude, just it'll it's just worth it. Yeah. So Lewis, would you want me to support you, Greg? Like I can talk to Greg about it. You can talk to me about it directly. I just want to
Sure.
see you succeed, man.
That'd be nice to sleep. Even on weekends, I try to stay in bed. I'm still up by 3:30, 4 o'clock.
There's so much we can do, buddy. John Schreckengoss just said that he started using mouth tape. I use mouth tape 80% of the time. My REM sleep went way up. There's a few other things I'll talk to you guys about in a second about that have really bumped my sleep. And John, Lewis, this would be useful for you. Again, I'm not sure financially if this is within your wheelhouse, but everyone, give me your attention for one more minute. I've been doing for since January 1st, I've been running a PepGuide protocol. And so transparently, I did a few injectable peptides. I did a few oral peptides. But man, my sleep and my quality of life have shifted in 30 days. Like I feel different. You know, Gavin and I trained this morning. I'm like a fucking new person in the gym, man. And like it's I feel like it was 10 years ago. It's really interesting. The only thing I've done differently is peptides, and I did stem cells in October. But the difference is unbelievable. And so the two peptides that, or the two systems, and I think I talked about this last week, a few systems you want to focus on, actually, Lewis, would be perfect for you. You focus on the pineal gland and the thymus, and the pineal gland is your the center for circadian rhythms, like your sleep-wake cycles. So you take these pineal peptides, and then the thymus is your immune system. I mean, your immune system is kind of regulating inflammation and, you know, immunity, basically, right? So we start with those two peptides, and so we go right after those peptides. And from an injectable perspective, if you want to do injectable, they're called Epitalon and Thymosin Alpha 1. Those are two, and I can give you the protocol if you want. And then if you don't want to do the injectables, you can do the orals. They're also effective, maybe not as effective. I chose to do both because I was like, I want to see what this actually does. And for me, the difference has been tremendous. And
prefer one over the other?
No, you do both. Oh, you mean injectable versus oral?
Yeah. Did you prefer one?
I think the way they suggest doing the protocol is you do the injectables first to kind of kickstart things, and the orals will keep you at that level. That's the way I read it. Uh-huh. That's the way I'm having my guys do it. We're actually going through, I've got 10 guys right now going through a longevity protocol. We're all doing the same protocol. And then we're going to test our epigenetic age at the end. And it's all involving these peptides. So I would start, Lewis, you need about 10 to 20 days on the injectables. Cost there would probably be $400 for 20 days, maybe a little less. And then the ongoing peptides for those two specifically, you're looking at $300 a month, which is not cheap, but not $1 million.
Can you put that down on the site so we can have the spelling?
I will drop it in the Telegram group. Are you in there, Lewis?
Okay. Yes.
Just so everyone can have it. Now, peptides are not illegal. Somebody asked this question the other day. Peptides are not illegal as far as I know. They are absolutely not legal either. They're not like over the counter. They're for research purposes only. So I'm not telling you or condoning or promoting the use of peptides unless you're a research professional.
Got it.
Zach, does calcification of the pineal gland lead to reduced melatonin secretion? It seems that way. I don't know for sure. Research seems to be leading in the direction of. That seems to be the reality. How does the pineal gland get calcified? Fluoride. So I'm told. And which is why we do these pineal-based peptides to reduce the calcification and renew the pineal gland. The pineal gland is also your third eye. It's your spiritual center. So it's been shown to, like, if you can open up the pineal gland, it's improving your spirituality as well, your connection to source or self. And I think those are often the same. Yep. So if anyone's interested, like, I put together a 6-month peptide protocol. I'm only putting my group through it right now. Once we've gone through it, you guys can, if you're interested, you can see the data, you can see the results, and then you guys can jump on. If anyone wants to jump on in the meantime, we can talk about it. Greg, is there a time during the night when cortisol and melatonin levels cross over, like which one going on, which one going off? I suppose there is, Greg. So what I know of...
About 3 a.m.
Sorry, brother?
About 3 a.m.
Did you look it up?
Yeah. Sorry, mate?
Did you look it up?
No. Oh, well, I've Googled it, but there's nothing there. There was some rubbish on TikTok, apparently, and it was only... You know, it wasn't research based, so I didn't go down that rabbit hole. But for me, I've had a long term issue with stress and anxiety. I've recovered from PTSD. Using mindfulness and meditation, I found that if I had an emotional, I'd feel stress in the middle of the night, and I was attaching that stress to the thought. So yeah, and when I was in a stressed state, I was blaming it on the thought. I was blaming the stress on the actual thought. But I found I was waking up feeling stressed and anxious, and I dialed into the moment and realized there was no thought. There was nothing going on. There's nothing that had caused that emotion. It was like a physiological response that had not been caused by something external that had happened to me. So for me, I put it down to something hormonal. It used to be alcohol while I was drinking, but got rid of that. Identified that that ramped up my response in the middle of the night as well when I woke up. So that was what was behind that question. If it was hormonal that was causing a physiological response and an emotional sort of reaction that wasn't caused by something external.
So it can be two primary inhibitory neurotransmitters. So the neurotransmitters exist primarily in the brain, the central nervous system. The two primary inhibitory ones are GABA and serotonin. Someone who wakes up anxious is usually either depleted, usually it's depleted in serotonin. Alcohol is known to deplete serotonin because of it's a negative impact on the gut. So the gut is where 90% of your serotonin is produced. Any antibiotics, any alcohol will kill your gut microbiome. Therefore, you're not going to be producing enough serotonin to feel that sense of peace in your body. GABA tends to be inhibitory. So if you have a racing mind, that tends to be more GABA. So it could be both. Often it is both. And there's some supplements you can take to quickly elevate both GABA and serotonin to give you that more calm state. And so for anyone who is experiencing these things, it's always individualized. This is why we have a coaching program and not protocol-based program. Because everyone's different based on symptoms, based on genetics, based on lab work. So I can give you a protocol, I can recommend stuff, but I'd rather hear symptoms and give you a specific protocol.
Thanks for that. I'm pretty good now. I found a sweet spot now where I can, through the breath work and a couple of techniques, I can, whatever it does, is switch off what is going on. I don't
Awesome,
attach
brother.
my emotion to a thought. So
Good man. Jimmy, you look like you're on fast forward. Like you like he's like Jimmy's pressed the fast forward button. Gentlemen, what else can I serve you with today? What else, how else can I support you before we let you guys get back to your amazing families?
And I have a quick question.
Sure, buddy.
Have you seen the hydrogen bottles? One of my clients is asking about that
Yeah, I've seen hydrogen. So man, everybody jumps on the Gary Brecka bandwagon. Hydrogen is useful in very specific circumstances. If you're flying in an airplane, use hydrogen. If you're getting any type of medical treatments that are around like large machinery, use hydrogen. The way to think of it, and this is super useful information, it's incredibly simple. Life is often about balancing out oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is an inevitable part of life. When you train, oxidative stress. When you eat, oxidative stress. When you're stressed, oxidative stress. When you alcohol, like when you have toxins in your body's creating oxidative stress constantly. Certain things produce huge spikes in oxidative stress. And so what we need is something to balance it out. Even meat increases oxidative stress. Now, here's the catch. We can easily balance out the oxidative stress by eating meat with vegetables or meat with berries, because vegetables come with antioxidants. Antioxidant, oxidative stress. These things balance each other out. Why would we take hydrogen? It's a very useful antioxidant. However, you can do too much with antioxidants. Taking too much hydrogen can be a bad thing to your body. We need oxidative stress. It's an important part of our life. So taking hydrogen frequently seems like a unnecessary thing and may cause negative effects. Where do we need a hydrogen? Maybe post-workout. I forget there was Sarah, can you make a note to ask Greg to look up the research on, there's some research, I forget exactly what it is, but some research on hydrogen taken at a specific time of the day will increase fat burning, specifically from intramuscular fat. I think it's in the morning, but I forget. But there's some useful stuff for hydrogen. But overtaking it is also bad. So Steve, hopefully that answers the question.
The other question I had was, you talked earlier about stress and breathing and all these things. Like, what suggestion would you have for somebody who's having a hard time getting started? Just being like, the stress seems overwhelming, and it's like that first foot in the door.
Just do it before you breathe, before you eat. So the easiest thing, man, is attached to something you're already doing. And so like I'll breathe when I'm brushing my teeth because your mouth is occupied, you breathe through your nose. I'll breathe before every meal. I'll breathe if I sit down in my car. Like I'm already doing something and I'm like, anytime I can have a cue to be slightly more mindful, more present, then I'm going to use that. And the cue is often like I'm eating. Right. So that's a good cue. And the key is just like, man, just slow it down. My cue to slow, or my internal feeling of slowing it down, is I try to relax my diaphragm. So we hold a lot of tension in our abdomen and our chest. Just let the diaphragm go. Let it relax up under the rib cage. Anyone else have questions?
Yeah. Do you recommend any supplement for sleep?
I do recommend some supplements for sleep, but everyone's different. So what part of the world are you in?
I'm in Bangladesh. It's Asia.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different potential supplements that could be used for it, depending what the challenges you're experiencing. Is it a hard time falling asleep, staying asleep? Is it a racing mind? I'll give you the basic protocol. Let me say this. Here's the basic protocol for everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone should be taking magnesium before bed. And ideally, yeah, I like magnesium threonate. Magnesium glycinate is okay as well, but I prefer magnesium threonate. If you're having a hard time with stress, like you feel anxious, try 400 milligrams of L-theanine. So magnesium, 400 to 600 milligrams. If you're feeling anxious, like you feel anxiety, I would take 400 milligrams of L-theanine. You could add in a little L-taurine, but in general, if you just take magnesium and theanine, most people will sleep well.
Thank you. And for the long sleep, because I can fall asleep within a half an hour, but it is difficult for me to continue sleep more than 6 hours.
How old are you?
I am 64.
How long has that been happening?
It is for a long time. Because I'm actually working in the evening mainly. Because I am a surgeon, I finish my work around 10, and then I come back home and take my dinner around 10:30, and go bed around 1 a.m. like that.
Maybe there's some stuff we could do for the pineal gland, because most guys, as they age, their pineal gland starts to calcify because we're consuming so much fluoride in our toothpaste. Make sure you're not using fluoride toothpaste, and ideally get the fluoride. If you have fluoride in your water, which I don't think you would in Bangladesh, you may, I would look at it and see if you can just make sure you have a water filter. And we can probably find you some supplements to reduce calcification of the pineal gland. I'll look it up. I don't know if you can get peptides over there. It's probably hard, but I'll see what I can find that it works, and I'll drop it in the group.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Maybe try some melatonin. So take like 500 micrograms of melatonin. See if you can find it sublingual, like sublingual melatonin. Take one before bed and leave one by your nightstand. If you wake up, put it in your mouth. So just a little bit of sublingual melatonin might do the trick. But very low dose, 500 micrograms.
500 micrograms.
Okay. Very low dose. Gents, that's a wrap for today. I appreciate you all being here. We got all the coaches on here too. Even Gav Show himself showed up. Look at this. Appreciate you guys all very much. Sending you all love and strength. Go kick ass and be amazing leaders in your community and in your family. If we can support you, please reach out. Thanks, gentlemen.